This is the All-Star Networking Show with your host, Kathy Paper.
Thank you so much for joining me on the All-Star Networking Show. Today is Kim Witzak. Thank you so much, Kim, for being here. I would love if you would just tell the listeners a little bit about what you're up to, what you're doing. You and I go back to our Fallon McGilliatt advertising days, but then we reconnected around some of your work, and you've just got such a rich background. I'm super psyched to have you on today's show.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. It's really fun to be back and doing like the full circle, because I think you and I go back to, and it's part of, you know, my introduction is, you know, living my life. I like to call myself the accidental advocate. I was doing, happily married, living, you know, my best life, traveling the world, working in advertising. And however, on August 6, 2003, over 20 years ago, I got a call from my dad that changed the trajectory of my life. You know, my dad called to tell me that my husband of 10 years was found dead at age 37. And literally, I was out of town on an advertising shoot when I got that call. And in 1 second, boom, the life that I knew and loved changed forever. And, you know, my husband's death, he was found hanging, which he died of suicide, which made no sense to me, because this guy loved life. He didn't have a history of depression. He wasn't depressed, but he had just started his dream job with a startup company a couple months prior and was having trouble sleeping. And he went into the doctor, which is no different than what a lot of us do. You know, Wood was an athlete. They fixed him. They stitched him up, you know, a broken bone, etc. And he went to see his doctor, and the doctor gave him a sample pack of a drug, Zoloft, and said it would take the edge off and help him sleep. And 5 weeks later, you know, Woody was dead. The first 3 weeks Woody was on the drug, I was out of the country. And when I came back, I found something that I'll always, and probably for the rest of my life, never forget, which is Woody walked in our back door completely drenched in his sweat, threw his shirt and fell to the floor and put his hands around his head like a vice. Kim, you got to help me. My head's outside my body looking in. And at that moment, you know, we calmed him down. He called the doctors, and the doctor said, you got to give it 4 to 6 weeks to kick in. And Woody lasted another week. So in that time since Woody's death, you know, which made no sense, the coroner had asked that night that Woody was found, was Woody on any medication? The only thing Woody was taking was Zoloft. And she said she had to take it with her. It might have something to do with his death. And also the night that Woody was found, the front page of our newspaper, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, had an article that said the UK finds link between antidepressants and suicide in teens. So literally the day that Woody was found, both of those things happened. And intuitively, in every part of my body, I knew something didn't make sense. Like, why would a guy who loved life take his own life? And so fast forward, you know, that became my mission, to go and get black box suicide warnings. So I started heading out to DC with my brother-in-law. And really, because if we could make one, like, get the information that we didn't have, because I didn't know that the FDA held hearings in 1991, did nothing. And it wasn't until 2004 when warnings got put on. But meanwhile, that was 13 years of time in between the FDA's first looking at this issue and to the time that they put a warning on. And now we have it approved for kids and for new drugs on the market. So really, that became a God-given mission for me. And that's really at the point where I wanted to, you know, we got the warnings on and I thought my job was done, but I really realized it's bigger than that. It's a systemic problem. And I'm still, and I think all my background, and I find it's interesting because all of my background in advertising has also influenced this work that I do today, my drug safety work. And I think that's when you and I came into working on your coaching side of the business, is how can I actually, what can I do with all of this? And so, anyways, it's fun to come back and talk full circle with you.
Well, it's great to have you back. And one, I have to just pause for a minute and just, say, like, I'm so sorry, because when you tell the sequence of events, there were, and I remember when we first reconnected, there were so many words that you used that I didn't understand as it relates to the medical journey. And a couple of those things with your work is, black box and kind of the FDA warnings and being a consumer advocate. As you said, you're an accidental advocate. But maybe just how did you get there from being with your brother-in-law, getting that phone call? I still have to like slow it down and hit rewind. Because you share so many things that I think people didn't realize didn't exist in 2003.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So first of all, I've been telling this story now for 20 years. It's part of my work and it's part of my fabric of my life. But that idea of a black box warning, I knew nothing about what a black box warning was in 2003 at the time of Woody's death. A black box warning is the most serious of all FDA warnings, and it's on the inside of like the paperwork that we get with our prescriptions. And oftentimes, if you're like me, we just toss them out. But it's literally in a black box at the top of the paperwork. And it also influences the way a drug can be advertised. We are one of the only two countries in the world that allows drug ads, period. And so I think the fact that another, tie to, my professional background is that was a big eye-opening, awareness too, that I didn't realize that other countries really don't allow drug ads in their country, and yet they're so prevalent in ours. So at the time of Woody's death, I didn't know what about black box warning and what that was. And so that became, and on top of it didn't exist back on those, on antidepressants at that time. So that really became our mission, is to get those warnings and push the FDA to get those warnings. And so to do that, we worked a lot with our members of Congress. So I had to learn how to be able to go in and work in a space that I had never worked in before. However, I think, we can all go back and lean on experiences that we have. And mine was advertising as a producer or as an account person that I was before. You're kind of in the middle. So you have to bring people together. And, as a producer, you're not the one that's making the commercial. You have to, bring everybody together. And so I feel like that concept is how we were also able to do a lot of the work out in DC. I didn't know how it worked, but we know the right questions to ask, and also knowing that it takes a bunch of us to make something happen. And so it like the getting the black box warnings, we had to work with Congress, the FDA. I had a lawsuit where we were able to get documents out from under seal that actually showed that the FDA and Pfizer and the drug companies knew about the risk of suicide with antidepressants well before the drugs were even on the market. And so we were able to use those documents and then the power of the media. So I think all of that together helped to, put pressure on to ultimately get those black box suicide warnings.
Well, and Kim, I want to just emphasize or talk more about, I think one of the things you do so naturally, and you said it is it's your mission with your work, but you do it so naturally, of how do you get in the middle or know what questions to ask? Like, maybe help people understand a little bit, you prepare so much, or just break it down just a little bit for people that are passionate about a cause and looking to make some connections, and not just passionate about a cause, passionate about your career or anything. We need other people, and just that phrase, I think that's your superpower of getting in the middle and aligning people.
Oh, thanks. So I do think it's funny because that is what an account person does, right? You're in the middle of the hub, and a producer is in the middle of the hub. And I feel like this role that I played was in the middle of the hub, which is this ability to see how it's all connected and that it's not just one person. You know, I would go to a lot of these academic conferences when I was trying to understand the issues. So I think that's part of it is learning and asking questions or being curious, right? Curious about whatever the issue is, or if it's a topic, is go and ask and do a 360 degree review. Like, what are the pros, the cons? Who's for it? Who's against it? What are the issues? And so I think when you get a full 360 degree understanding of something, you can actually then figure out, oh, who are the players? And one of the questions, who are the players that can actually help move an agenda forward, whether it's in a career or a project you're working on at business, or, you know, taking on an issue like this. I knew, again, like I go back, I didn't know anything about any of this, like how the FDA worked, drug companies, you know, antidepressants. I knew nothing, but I had enough background to ask questions and to understand the good, the bad, the ugly, you know, what are the issues? You can kind of watch it because, and also asking, where's the tension? Because the tension is actually where the issue kind of lives. And so that's really what I did. And then connecting the dots and figuring out who are all the players, and also finding that there's a common thread that exists between everybody, right? So I think back to, you know, using my advertising role as an account or as a producer, you know, the client has just as important part of the of our project as the director who might be shooting it, as the creative, as the somebody in accounting who's paying the bills so that we can make sure that the project happens, right? So it's this idea and a belief system that we all have a part and a responsibility and a role. And so how do you engage all those people that have different roles into a project with each knowing that somebody might come from a different point of view, but how do you find that common thread that can actually move something forward?
Yeah, I'm making a note here because to engage all those people and get the common thread, as well as your curiosity, I'm looking on your LinkedIn and you were the first, was it the consumer person on the FDA board or you tell a little bit more about your role because you've been very successful being this quote accidental advocate.
Oh, so I today, which, you know, in 1991, the FDA held a hearing, and everyone on that committee at that time said they nope, they all took ties from, they all had financial ties with the drug company, and they all said, nope, we don't see anything. Well, today I sit on that same committee. So I take my role super serious, which is about safety. And so when I sit on that role, I don't have, I mean, I have skin in the game, meaning I have skin in the game that it matters to me, safety for other people. But I don't have a financial skin in the game, meaning I can say, and I'm not being self-censored because I have to worry about, you know, where the monies are coming from if I'm an academic from a university, knowing that my financial, how I make my living might be impacted by this decision. So that is gives me a sense of freedom, is that I don't have a financial skin in the game. I only have a heart skin in the game, meaning for other people. And so what I've been able to do is, as a consumer rep, I'm supposed to represent the public, and I also don't come from an academic or a medical background, so I get to use all the tools from my experience that brought me into that role. So, you know, I go back to my tools being from my advertising marketing background when we took on new clients and new business, you know, we approached new businesses with this sense of curiosity, right? And then I had the personal, experience with my husband. Then I had the legal aspect where I had a lawsuit, and I know the power of what is in lawsuits, and a lot of it comes from the marketing. And so when I go and sit on this committee, my job is to not only look at the data. So this is the committee that new drugs come before, like if there's a controversy or maybe, the FDA wants it's we're an outside group of experts that review data that are being submitted from the companies. But I get to ask questions. And I love that because for me, it's not just the questions that are in this, in this, the data that's being, submitted to the FDA. I get to go look at what does the company all about? Who, what does the CEO, Wall Street analyst calls, what information can I learn from that, those calls to help me understand what their business is? Because the FDA is just a stepping stone in getting a product onto the market. But the real market is, the real business opportunity is when the marketing and advertising starts, right? And so knowing that the FDA and this experience is really about getting it approved. So you're going to always put the best data forward. You're going to put, how many times have we done this in advertising when we're trying to do market research? We know the questions. We know that it's all about what questions you start with and put with the consumers, right, for any research. So of course, if this is their business, they're going to put their best foot forward, and the data is going to show that it works and certainly not going to harm. So anyways, I use all of that. I call it a cocktail of, experiences, and use that in my role as consumer representative.
That's great. It's great. But how do you're again, I think you're very savvy at playing all these markets and different people. And you said you're not an academic, you're not medical, but you're right in there in some really important work. How do you get people comfortable to let you ask questions or maybe speak to how you build that rapport with people if you've thought about it?
Sure, I think one thing, because again, I'm not an academic, but I showed up. I was at places where they were, right? So I would go to these conferences and I would go to learn. I also feel like a lot of times, because I would see it as like they're the experts at the front of the room and I'd be in the room, but really where conversations happen is at like breaks. It's at the lunch hour. It is during the cocktails afterwards, where you actually got to go and just talk to people as people. And I think instead of giving them the power of like, oh, they're in the white coat, meaning they're a doctor or they've got the PhD, JD, all the letter alphabet soup behind them, that I would actually just go talk to them as people because you know what? They're interested in life too. And we kind of sometimes forget that when we're doing it. But first and foremost, I think I got myself in the room where these people were. And that was about showing up and putting yourself in an uncomfortable place, but knowing that you were going to learn things. And then you get to meet people. And eventually, who knows, you might be friendly with them or have somebody that you appear that you can ask questions when you don't understand, or maybe engage them in a project that you want to handle yourself. So.
Yes. Oh, I love that of talking to them as people, or where the conversation happens at break and the lunch hour and happy hour. When I worked at Best Buy, there was a senior level man that used to say he traveled a lot for what he did, but he would say, "Not enough hall time." He'd always go, "Not enough hall time, not enough hall time." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he's like, "I need to walk the hallway to be able to talk to people." And of course, since the pandemic and work from home, I would punctuate for people listening that you showed up at the conferences and get in the room and go to learn. Just some great ways of reinforcing that curiosity. You said, though, sort of get in that uncomfortable place. Are you really uncomfortable the whole time, or just that opening moment, or you just, again, seem so such a natural person that connects other people and is that bridge builder? Speak to that uncomfortable part, because I always say that from the survey, 72% of people cannot stand networking. So how did you get over that uncomfortable part?
I would say, I think you just have to do it regardless. Even last week, I went to a conference that was something more like for my own self, self-improvement kind of conference. And I walk into this VIP night and I knew nobody. And I was looking for somebody. And there was a part of me that I had this little bit of anxiety of going. It was interesting is this person. There was no alcohol. And so I realized that the tool of like, oh, I'll just go to a bar and get a drink because it makes me makes me at least feel like I have holding something. You didn't have that. And so I actually had to go and just awkwardly start talking to somebody. And we both talked about that whole idea of being awkward and still having that little bit of fear. And I think it doesn't mean it isn't there. It's about showing up and doing it in the face of it. And you know what? If you're awkward and you feel like you're awkward, I can guarantee you somebody else is feeling that same way. And so we look at people who we think like, oh, they got it all together. They seem super comfortable. You have no idea what's going on inside. I have come to realize that because I hear it about myself. And as I was mentioning before we had this call, I woke up this morning with a really like kind of the I call it the roommate in the head, all the negative things that are going through your head, the ego, that I was like, okay, nope, you're gonna have to like fight it. You're gonna have to go get out of that space. So I think there's some being legitimately honest with ourselves and looking in the mirror and honoring, yep, I am a little nervous, but I'm going to still do it anyway.
Yes. Oh, you're so awesome, awesome and strong. Which is why I did. I looked at and saw that you are an aerialist. Can we talk about that network of one of your other how did that come about? Or is it a hobby and a passion? Or
Sure.
because you were just featured on the news as well, right?
I was, but I will say that it actually is my good friend. She's a psychologist by day, and she's used to working in the mental health space. And when her dad and brother both passed away within 6 months of each other, she goes, I don't even know how to handle this, right? Meaning, like, I deal with this all the time. So she got into her, she started doing aerial art, yoga, and then one thing led to the next. And then she created something called the Circus for the Brokenhearted. And in that was this idea of grief lives in our body, right? And I saw that a long time ago is that grief gets trapped, emotions get trapped in our body, and that we are not just like, oh, you got to talk about something. Sometimes you got to move your body. And that means physically moving it. And whether it's some kind of workout. And in that time, so my friend Sherry said, I think you might like to try this trapeze. And I was like, and I could see every part of my head saying, nope, you don't do this. You're not athletic. Like you could hear the t thoughts. I'm
Right.
like, nope, you're gonna go. You're gonna get up there. I'm lucky that I am not afraid of heights, but I get up there. But every single thing that went through my head, it was fascinating because you had to trust the people on the bottom that were going to help guide you, right? And then you are like, you had to listen and you had to deal with like the fear. And then all of a sudden you did it, you got done, and you're like, oh my gosh, I just did that. And so through that, there's confidence that comes when you do the hard things and things that you don't think you can do. But sometimes, if it wasn't for my friend who said, I bet you can do it. And so, to me, it also tells me that it's important to have people who push you because they see that you can be more than what you are. And that's exactly what she did for me. Is she said, I bet you can do it. And so she believed in me. And then I did it. And then when you do it, you find yourself like, oh, I guess I can do it. And there's some confidence that comes with it.
No, I wrote that one down. So for anybody listening, I punctuated that, or I'll put that in the show notes. Is you said through doing those things, the confidence comes when you go through the hard things, and really powerful. And then important to have people that push you, or somebody that said, "I bet you can do that." And good for you for doing that, and for showing up in all these places. Where do people find out more about you, or if they want to hire you as a speaker or a drug safety advocate, how do they connect with you? What's the best way?
Sure. Well, I have my website, kimwitzak.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I'm on
Great.
LinkedIn. I am on Twitter or X now. And then I also have a Substack that is called the Acceptable Collateral Damage, but it's really Unacceptable Collateral
Right.
Damage. So those are ways that you can get in touch with me. And I'd love to come talk with, groups that are working on issues, but also just I'm here if somebody just has a question about any medications they're taking or even just any issue that they're dealing with. I'd love to be a part of answering any questions.
Oh. That's great. It's just so great. So again, this is the hard part of the show of we got to wrap up. So if there's any one last thing you want to, punctuate for the listeners, you've just been so fabulous. We'll look for you on Kim Witzek and then LinkedIn. I'll find you on Substack. I'll put that in the show notes as well. Just anything else you want to share with people?
I have learned the biggest sense or confidence that I have gotten is by showing up. And I think magic happens when you show up in no matter what it is, whether it's, your job, something you believe in, or even your physical exercise life, is magic happens when you show up. And so I've seen it firsthand.
Oh, excellent. Well, Kim, thank you so much for being here. It was awesome to reconnect. And I love that magic happens when you show up, and grief does live in our body, and we'll just keep moving because life is filled with highs and lows. And thank you for your work and for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the All Star Networking Show with Kathy Paper. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact Kathy at www.rockpaperstar.com.